Hi, I'm Danae Alamano, and this is Living United.
And I'm Kev Jackson. Danae, who do we have on the show today?
We have Reed Olson with us. Not only is he a county commissioner and runs the Wild Hare, but he's also the executive director of the Nameless Coalition for the Homeless. So welcome, Reed.
Hey, thank you. Happy to be here.
Reed, first of all, for those who aren't familiar, and I must admit I'm not completely familiar, what is the Nameless Coalition?
Okay, well, the Nameless Coalition for the Homeless, we started meeting, I guess, back in October of 2013. We became a 501c3 in January of 2015, and our mission, I should know our mission statement by heart, and I don't. But our mission basically is to provide temporary overnight shelter for people who find themselves outdoors, especially in our coldest months. So, like I said, we kind of became a real organization in January of 2015, and 13 months later, in February of 2016, we opened up the Wolf Shelter, a lot of people call it the Wolf Center, which is located on 6th and Minnesota, no, 6th and America, rather, downtown Bemidji, kind of in between the library and the social services building of the county.
So, contrast and compare what you do with some of the other homeless shelters that are in the area.
Okay, so again, we are an emergency overnight shelter. So we function from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. And one thing that makes us distinct in the community and really unique in the state is that we accept people who are suffering from substance use disorder. So people who are actively drinking or using other drugs and have nowhere else to go. And of course, we don't allow people to imbibe while they're at our facility, but most shelters in Minnesota and around the country don't allow people in who are drunk, you know, who are high. And given our winters and the deaths that we've had in the past, we created, it's called a low barrier entry model. So we try to eliminate any barriers to entry. So you don't have to, most people we have are residents, but we don't check people's IDs. We don't ask them if they're a resident. We don't give them a breathalyzer. We don't ask them if they're using. We do ask them to not have any drugs or paraphernalia when they come to our shelter. And if they have alcohol, we will check it away and give it back to them in the morning. Now, a lot of times when people hear this for the first time, they will say, wow, you're really enabling people to drink. You should tell them that they can't, you know. But that's what a lot of other places do. Not everybody, you know, but and when that happens, then you see participation, you know, use of the shelter go down because people are in the throes of addiction and they cannot stop, you know. So if we were to tell people that they have to be sober to come in, it would undermine our very mission of trying to help keep people alive. What often happens, not everybody, but what often happens is people will, because of this, because they know that their alcohol will be safe, they don't drink as much because they might say, well, if I'm going to chug this before I go in or whatever, you know. People are afraid to stash it somewhere because they don't want it to get stolen. So having that security of being able to check it in and get it back in the morning really has a moderating effect on people's drinking. And ideally, after time, we can refer people to other services, refer people to more stable housing, treatment and stuff. And so we're operating now our fifth year. And definitely since COVID has entered the U.S., I'm sure we're going to talk about that too. But now that we're in our fifth year, I have now friends who I met as users of our shelter, and now they are employed and housed and sober in our community. And I've been thanked, and my coworkers have been thanked many times by people who say, you know, if it wasn't for you guys, I would be dead right now. And instead, I'm, you know, in a stable relationship, in a home with a job, you know. So, so that's kind of a brief, well, maybe not so brief explanation of what it is that we do.
Today, how do they fit in with the United Way's mission?
Basic needs. I mean, everybody needs housing. We all know in Bemidji that every year someone's freezing under the bridge or something awful's happening, and the fact that Reed and the Nameless Coalition are willing to, you know, take people that have been maybe kicked out of other facilities or not welcomed there, and the fact that he has a model that also can help people move forward when they're ready to face their addiction, I think is a great thing for Bemidji, knowing that people are safe too, especially now with COVID. And I know we'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah, we certainly will. But I do want to just ask Reed another question or two before we get there. How many people have you been able to serve?
I wish I had the exact number, but I can tell you that we've had over, in the 5 years we've operated, over 10,000 night stays. Unique individual users, I would have to look back at our data. I don't have that off the top of my head. About half of those night stays would be people who are kind of familiar faces who stay with us, maybe all of one season or all of two seasons. And then we have people that maybe, you know, sometimes someone might, we've had several times where someone, you know, they're stably housed. There's a couple that live in a one bedroom apartment, and they fall out of love, and one of them is forced to leave, and they may have a job but no savings and no support network, so they end up staying with us while they're working, saving up money, you know, for 2 or 3 months, saving up money to be able to get that first month's deposit secure, or last month and a security deposit to move into their own place. So it's kind of hard to judge exactly how many people have stayed with us, but it's a lot. It's a lot of people that have used us either for a long period of time or just for one night, you know, when they find themselves in a predicament, you know.
Do people come and knock on the door, or are they sent over by law enforcement officials that might see them out and cold, or a combination?
Right. Yep. We get people referred to us from Sanford Health, from law enforcement, from partner agencies in the community, word of mouth, you know. People find their ways to us through a variety of ways. But I think the two primary would probably be through the hospital and through law enforcement. And then referral from other people that have, I guess, have used us or are would be currently using us, so a variety of ways.
You know, I have, because this is a phone interview and I have access to the internet, I went up to our website, unitedwaybemidji.org, just to see, read our information that you gave us. Was that in 2018 now? You had 284 different individuals stay at the at the shelter. So that's a significant amount of
right.
people in our community.
Yeah, so you could use that and extrapolate that we, you know, some of those people may be use us for a couple of years. Almost nobody that we're serving now was with us. I don't think there may be one person that I can think of that is with us now that was with us when we first opened. So I think you could take that and extrapolate out that we have probably had, that would be like maybe 800 or so, 700 unique individuals that have used us for either one day or 90 days, you know. And I would like to say that since we've been open, and while I'm talking about this, I just want to admit or acknowledge that, People's Church is also has a similar model. They're a little bit different than we are, but also has done a lot to help people that are living with profound addiction and mental health issues and stuff like that. So we're not the only ones in the community. Mm-hmm. Yes.
True. How many beds do you have?
We had until very recently, we had 16 beds, and the state of Minnesota put together a fund this winter to help existing emergency shelter programs like ours expand their capacity. So through that program, we got a small grant that enabled us to buy beds. And I will give a quick plug to Slumberland, who has repeatedly just bent over backwards and given us such wonderful prices on bedding and pillows, mattresses, beds. And so this winter we expanded our shelter by 10 beds. So now we have 26 beds at our facility at Six in Minnesota, Six in America.
That's wonderful.
Now, like pretty much everybody else in the world, COVID-19 has apparently caused some changes in the way you have to operate. What's happened there?
Well, my board, in consultation with me, or whatever, in discussion with me, it seems like it was a year ago, but I think it was probably the 23rd. Yeah, the 23rd of March, we decided, that was a Monday, we decided that that would be the last night that we were going to operate the Wolf at our site, because it's one big open room with bunk beds and single beds. And it would be really hard. Well, it'd be impossible on a full night to be able to do proper social distancing with people. So we decided that that was no longer a safe environment for our staff or our guests. And, in just a great collaboration between the county and, the Super 8 Motel, we were able to lease the annex, and the county is helping out with a lot of this cost, at least initially here. We're trying to get grants to continue to find continued funding, but we took over the annex of the Super 8. It's a 30 room building, and we opened up there on the 27th. So we can put people two to a room, and, you know, in a full bed. So they can sleep well apart from one another. And it just is a lot safer from a standpoint of social distancing and slowing down any kind of, spread.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's nice that we have people willing to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, and Kevin Williamson, the owner, deserves. He's right now. He's wondering why he's frowning, because he just does not want any accolades for anything that he does. But he's just a wonderful guy, and was so wonderful to work with. He was working with us every day to make this happen, and it is really great. And it's been challenging, I'll admit, because you know, when you have people in a big open room, you can see what everybody's doing. Now, granted, we have master keys to get into any of the rooms, but so much of what we do is through, yes, we do have rules, but a lot of it is just relationship building and just kind of, peer pressure to be cool, you know, to be relaxed and stuff. And so when everybody is behind a closed door, there are new challenges. You know, most of our people that we serve smoke, some people maybe try to sneak a smoke in the hotel room. And for someone like me that is a non-smoker, it's really hard to get away with that. So there's a little bit of kind of, sometimes I feel like a substitute teacher in a junior high. but it's going fairly well. We had someone, so when people come in, we check people in, one by one or two by two, if there's couples, you know, and we temp everybody, and we have personal protective equipment. We've got some really great, protocols in place, and I feel really secure. My staff feels really secure, about like not being, overly exposed to potential infection. We did have a gentleman last week that came in, and he had a temperature of 101, which was really concerning. So we asked people to shelter in place because he was standing in line and interacting with other people that were staying with us. So we asked everyone to hang out and wait while we were getting the results back from his test. Thankfully, it came back negative. And so then we loosened up our ask and no longer are having people shelter with us during the day. So that was a little bit of a scare. And thankfully, it was the results came back negative.
Have you found, with in addition to this move, anything else that all of a sudden is a big need that you maybe wouldn't have foreseen before COVID-19?
Well, I think so. let me start this way.
That's a loaded question.
Yeah, it kind of is, yeah. Yes.
So what I'll say is, one need that arose from moving out there was figuring out how to pay for being at a hotel, you know. And again, Super 8 worked with us really great. They gave us a real reasonable room rate. But still, that's, 20 rooms a night or 12 rooms a night for a whole month or it's probably going to be 2 months that we'll be doing this, I'm guessing. Applied for, I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, but there was an emergency grant offered by the United Way. And we wrote into that. Thank you.
She's aware of that.
yes. So we applied for the grant and, asked for so what we did with the county was we said, okay, we'll pay for the first 3 rooms. I felt like that was something that we could afford, and hopefully find the resources for, because that's above and beyond our normal cost of operation. And, and there's a very quick turnaround on that grant application, for which we are so grateful, because that is what made it possible for us to do this, you know. So we got a grant to cover some from the United Way to cover some of the overtime that I'm expecting we'll see, and then the rooms. And then now this is stretching out a lot longer, and it was a very generous grant, but it's not going to, take us through this whole 2-month period. So there are some other state grants that I'm also applying for to try to backfill that need. But I really am, we would not be here if not for the United Way giving us that emergency grant. That really is what enabled us to shift our operations. And it's a pretty big shift for an organization that is as small as us and has such a narrowly defined mission, to really step out of our comfort zone and take this plunge into a kind of a new model of delivering services. So yes, thank you, to the United Way board and to you, Danae, for making those funds available and then being so, responsive, and having it be such an easy and quick turnaround I think it was less than a week from when I hit send on the application to when we got the funds in our account. So, which are now just well gone.
I believe that. Well, you are not limited in the amount of time you apply, Reed, but the board was very thoughtful in wanting us to, we're always raising funds for it. So it's a rolling basis. But every Monday we're vetting the funds, and the Nameless Coalition was a very quick, yes, fully fund them conversation. Mm-hmm. So what you're doing is just such a great, a huge need and really important to keep everybody separate and safe. And I know other communities are seeing the homeless population is the quickest to get it.
One thing I would like to say to that too is that, our unhoused population are not the hobos from the 30s that are riding the rails all across the U.S., Mm-hmm. Our unhoused people, they went to BHS, Bemidji High School, or to Cass Lake High School, or Red Lake High School. I mean, they are from here. They are our neighbors. They're our relatives, and so that's one thing that I really want to stress is that our unhoused population did not import COVID to Bemidji, but because of how their forced to live, as far as living at homeless shelters that are open spaces, congregate housing, as we call it, you know, where everybody is in one big room, the opportunity to spread amongst the population. So they're the least responsible for bringing it to the community, but are most vulnerable to infection, you know, and slowing down, you know, we're always hearing about flattening the curve and trying to slow down the spike, which Minnesota, if anybody listened to the governor today, we are just knocking it out of the park at that. It makes the duration longer, and maybe the economic pain seems worse, but compared to a huge spike that overwhelmed our hospitals, that would be real economic pain and real hardship and a lot more deaths. But I really believe that what we're doing right now and what People's Church is doing and what the Village of Hope is doing and Battered Women's Shelter and all the other shelters that are working in this community, by slowing down the spread in this population, we're ensuring that they are, you know, a lot of the people that we serve are vulnerable adults. They have weakened immune systems. They have underlying illnesses, diabetes, heart conditions, asthma, things like that. We ran the risk and run the risk of this population getting it before everybody else, and then being the first people to flood the ICU units and take up the limited ventilators that we have. So by slowing down the transmission amongst this population, we are really slowing down the transmission in the community and making sure that our hospital system is going to be able to accommodate people as they hopefully trickle in and not flood in, you know. So it's kind of an unseen and forgotten about population, but in this moment, it really shows that we are all one community and we are all in it together.
Today, this is a great example of what those who have donated to the emergency fund, what they're helping do.
Yes, absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely. This benefits all of us. It truly, truly does. You know, so I was saying to someone, I said, if you want to be selfish, help me take care of this population, because if you need to go to the ER, this is going to ensure that you're going to, or to, you know, ICU, this is going to ensure that you're going to be able to do that.
Yeah. You know, Kat, something else that the group that Reed, you know, he's talking about People's Church and Village of Hope and also the county and the collaboration they've done, Evergreen, too. But they've invited Ruth Sherman from Community Resource Connections and myself to join their coalition phone calls. And it's been really good for me to be on those calls, because you can hear about gaps, and it's not just funding gaps, which is a huge part of it, but you know, they were out of hand sanitizer, and we collaborated with the Science Center, who you know, Annie Butler-Ricks used to be the director there and happened to know that they had supplies that could make hand sanitizer, so just to give them, you know, a quick bump in hand sanitizer, so because they don't have a lot of options to be, you know, sanitary during the day. Or they all need masks now, so we're pushing for the community to make quite a few masks. And just been good to be on the call to be able to see or hear, you know, where are the gaps and how can the United Way help in those different ways.
Yeah, and for me, one of the things, and that's all very true, you know, we've received different things that we've needed through those conversations. We have 3 a week for... We say that they're going to be a half an hour. They always end up being an hour and 10 minutes. We've been able to help out other partner agencies. They've been able to help us out. And then the biggest thing is that, you know, sometimes this can be really lonely, exhausting work. And especially transitioning over to the hotel is just a lot of work, a lot of all-nighters for me. And sometimes you get kind of tunnel vision and you don't see what anyone else is doing and you feel like you're all alone. So having these every other day meetings through the week has really been helpful, just in knowing that there are other people out there that are working on the same problems, and you can get ideas from people or learn what to not do. And just have that camaraderie has been, for me, really helpful, and just in keeping my spirits up and my energy up and my optimism up, because it's it's been really challenging. So I'm very thankful for that.
Today, before we wrap it up, we should just remind people you do have a website and a couple of phone numbers people can call to find out what services are available, what their hours are, new processes people might have to go through, all that stuff.
Yeah, we've been updating Community Resource Connections website at crcinform.org. And you can also call 211 if you're looking for services. Maybe you've never had to, you know, find out when the food shelf's open or different things like that. United Ways across the state hosts the phone number 211, so you can call for different services that way. You can always visit our website, too, UnitedWayBemidji.org, and learn about the agencies like the Nameless Coalition and how you can help.
Okay. Anything before we wrap it up, Reed? Anything else you'd like to share?
Yes, and forgive me if anyone's listening and I didn't thank your agency for helping me, but I want to quick thank Community Tables for giving us food in the evenings. I also want to thank River City Church for doing meals every Sunday at the St. Michael's parking lot, the old Pomita parking lot, for anybody. A lot of people have stepped forward to help us out with food and just about anything. I've got some hand-sewn homemade masks that I thank people for. So just all of the support from the United Way and from all the individuals and organizations in the community, I just want to thank everybody. And I want to thank law enforcement for being wonderful right now and the county for really working hard to help us figure out how to protect this vulnerable population and everybody else that I'm forgetting to mention before you play the Oscar music to play me off the stage. But yes, thank you and thank you and thank you.
All right. Reed Olson from the Nameless Coalition joining Danae and I today. And Danae, anything else you want to add before we wrap it up?
This is hard work what Reed's doing, and so a big thank you to him as well.
All right. Reed, thank you for taking the time today. We really do appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Yep. Thank you very much for having me and helping me get the word out of what we're doing and the accolades to all the people that are helping us do it. So thank you.
And today we will check in with you soon.
Sounds good.